Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, 4th edition Dungeons and Dragons. Happy birthday to you. 4th edition Dungeons and Dragons came out 1 year ago. It's a cute little boy, there is no doubt. But not everything has been as smooth as a proud parent might want. The Tome Show, in conjunction with Dungeon Mastering, Critical Hits, Gamers Haven, Sly Flourish, Chatty DM, and At Will, sat down and chatted with Chris Perkins and James Wyatt, the creative and design managers of 4th edition at Wizards of the Coast. They talked to us about how the first year of the new edition has gone, what could have gone better, and what we can expect in the second year of our favorite game. On Wednesday, June 10th, the internet is going to explode with blog posts, as well as full audio of the discussion on thetomeshow.com. Come to the party, you're all invited. 4th edition, 1 year later, at thetomeshow.com. Happy birthday to you.
Quiet, please. I am analyzing.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Is the next step the transplantation of the human brain?
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
Stand by for action.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Okay.
Remember, we're not dealing with an intelligence on our own level.
Bring in the logic probe!
Ooh!
End of line.
Well, welcome back to the Gamers Haven podcast. It's been a long couple of weeks for us.
Yes.
And the silence is deafening at that.
Poke Jeremy with the stick. Wake him up.
Yes. Tired.
Jeremy's been working for 10 hours today.
Plus
and
the
we
drive.
Can't understand why he's not dancing on the table. Why aren't you dancing on the table?
Because my table wouldn't take it.
Oh, there is
there's that. And I haven't been paid enough yet.
Oh, right. Well, Nathan, get on that.
Will Quatloos work?
No. Nope.
Sorry, I can't help you then.
Oh, what's our quick little update? What's going on? I mean, you were having some flooding issues in your basement.
Yeah, mostly it's dried up, but now it's going to rain all week, so.
Hooray for our side.
It may.
We got the sound system up yesterday.
We did get the sound system up, so we now have surround sound. So that's good.
Somewhat.
No, it's surround.
Yeah, it is surround sound.
Complete surround sound.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
I need to get two more speakers, though.
Four?
I already have four.
The receiver can have another, has a set of B speakers, and he can run those over to, like, his pantry.
Just to have some others.
Some stereo, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was working fine.
Uh-huh.
That's good.
Uh-huh. Managed to get it all mounted and everything on the cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys get those mounts from like Walmart or whatnot?
Didn't have any.
No, because no Walmart within 100 miles has them.
Yeah.
My Walmart right down here has them.
We,
not according to Walmart.com. According to
Walmart.com. Walmart.com is full of crap.
We did find something at Walmart that would work.
We basically bracketed them up,
yeah.
It worked out just fine. And we got the whole thing done for like $8.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it would have cost you more than that to use those little stands, but they were still like, you know.
But so. Yes, there's that. My brother got married.
Huzzah to him. Congratulations.
Yes. So, and at the end of finals week, they got married. So I was pretty much... Sunday afternoon after I took my sister to the airport, pretty much went home and
died
for, you know, several hours. I did manage to finish Knights of the Old Republic 2 finally. I know that's old, but man, that's a disjointed game at the end.
Yes, it is.
Sort of
it has problems.
To, like, you know, end.
It was such a fun game up until that point.
Yeah, I now started playing Jade Empire, and I've never played that before, and I'm digging it. It's pretty good.
I've heard good things about
it. But then again, it's actually BioWare, so, you know, go figure.
What are you playing?
Jade Empire.
Yeah. You don't have my copy. I have mine.
No.
I know you're borrowing. I know you were borrowing Call of Cthulhu from me.
I have a ton of your stuff. ton of your Xbox
and my PlayStation 2, which, by the way,
I've got some of your stuff. I've got your PlayStation 2, and I've got one or two of your PlayStation 2 games. I have your Hulk Ultimate Destruction.
Mm-hmm. I think you have two of my games because I think you have.
I have Capcom. I have some Capcom Classics thing, and
yeah,
then Mega Man X Collection. I think
Anniversary Collection. Yeah,
I had a lot of fun playing the Wii version of Mario Kart on Sunday.
Sweet. Oh, Mario Kart.
Mario Kart.
That's right. It's just called Wii Mario Kart.
Mm-hmm. It was awesome.
I love Mario Kart on my problem SNES and N64 was awesome.
For those of you out there who haven't played the Wii version of Mario Kart, it is really cool because when you drive, you twist the joystick like you twist the steering wheel. The problem is this. It works really great when you have the steering wheel mechanism because you can see how you're mm-hmm. turning. If you don't have the turning the steering wheel mechanism, when you turn, you make a habit of like flipping the controller over on itself, and you end up doing donuts down the road.
Sweet.
I had the steering wheel, so it worked.
So it's like any other racing game I play.
Yeah. But the steering wheel is really nice. Yeah, like it actually, a lot of steering wheels, you'll plug them in, and there's that delay.
Uh-huh.
There's no delay in this. So it was nice. That's one game that would almost make the Wii something I would... What buy?
Actually, cool. See, the thing is every game that I've played on the Wii, and I'm very picky about what I play, but every game I've played on the Wii I've actually enjoyed. There's just not a lot of games I would prefer to own on the Wii.
Yeah, and a lot of games are too... Really, you have to have multiple people, except with Mario Kart, I never really needed multiple people because I just enjoyed Mario Kart.
Well, yeah, what's not to enjoy about Mario Kart? Another one that's actually fun by yourself is they re-released Pikmin with updated controls.
Mm. Yes, I got my brother to buy it. He hasn't played it yet, but you never actually played the original.
Oh, I have the original on the GameCube.
It's a great game. It's a great game. But...
I'm just waiting for them. They announced that they're going to re-release Metroid Prime 1 and 2.
Sweet.
So that'll be awesome to see.
Yeah. So, really, we've been playing lots of video games lately, I guess.
No, actually, not really.
Not a lot, no. No, just one.
Yeah.
So we've been playing those video games a lot lately.
Well, I've been beta testing a game online, but...
Okay.
I know it was only for about... 3 hours.
Sweet.
I've been beta testing a game online, but due to the NDA, non-disclosure agreement you have to sign when you agree to beta test for it, I can't really talk about it. But I'm having a good time with it, for the most part.
And it's a game called Smurf. Anyway, today we are talking about fantasy gaming and sort of accuracy and what kind of accuracy you need to have. Like, how historically accurate do you want to make fantasy games? That sort of thing. And sort of fantasy games in general, I think. We might talk a bit about that.
And there's a train coming through the room.
Yes, yes. I think those trash cans installed some sort of a steam train to go through here. I got nothing.
Actually, that's coming through the temporal rift that Jeremy created earlier.
Oh. Have we figured out how to control the temporal rift yet? Or
no,
I just throw stuff in it.
Okay. It just seems to be set in 1882.
We need to try a flux capacitor.
We don't have one of those.
Well, we need to build one.
Okay. To quote the third doctor, have you reversed the polarity yet?
Hey, that's an idea. We're going to go reverse the polarity. We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by RPG Now, the leading source of indie role-playing games, with over 10,000 RPG titles from over 500 creators and publishers. There are new RPG treasures to discover every day at www.rpgnow.com.
And we're back. And as we said in the intro today we're talking about historical accuracy and fantasy gaming and fantasy gaming in general. The thing that sort of brought me to this one, this topic, was how historically accurate do you think a fantasy game has to be? Because, most fantasy games are based on, Arthurian, timeline, Arthurian...
Legend,
Arthurian era... England, that sort of thing, a medieval time period, and how much does history influence how you do your fantasy games?
An orc with a machine gun fighting a knight in full plate armor with a sword is cool.
Okay.
But not very historically accurate.
No.
I think the way I look at it for this is the more history that you add to the game, or more accuracy of historical accuracy that you add to a fantasy game, the more amount of suck you get from the players. Because then they start trying to adhere to all the stuff, and the game goes from being let's run around and kill things to let's make sure we don't piss off the king in court when we try to introduce ourselves. And it's like, oh, just for the love of God, go kill something.
Well, there's the that's taking the literal history and slapping it into your game. But you know, how often do you play in a fantasy game or you read a fantasy game where you know the monarchy is very, 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 you know, very much resembles, you know, medieval era Europe, you know, and the feudal system and that sort of thing.
Well, considering the feudal system is one of the easiest systems to create a role-playing game system around, I can see why it's pantomimed. That's the wrong word I'm looking for. I can see why it's duplicated in role-playing games so often, because it does...
emulated.
Yeah, because it does lend itself to being used in that format. It's like doing a monarchy like doing like an oligarchy would be probably freaking impossible in a role-playing game due to all the various different things that go into it. Monarchies, not so much. We see those all the time. An oligarchy would be pretty bad. Republics and democracies work fine because, you know, for the most part, you know, you don't, you know, it's unseen, unheard, untouched. But
how much bias do you think there is in there with a with basically playing in a fantasy game when, you know, I think everyone sort of comes into it expecting...
Kings,
queens, knights, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I think it's a stereotype that could easily be broken, and you could easily do some very cool stuff with it.
Well, if you have the right setting and the right players, hell yeah. But the thing is the average player comes in with a lot of very, very narrow preconceived notions on how the game is going to be. And as you know from having run so many games, and Jeremy knows from having run so many games, when you start to break down people's preconceived notions and how something's going to work, rather than actually roll with the punches, the first thing they always do is bitch about it.
Typically,
yeah, there's two types of players that I've found in this. There's the ones that are quite willing to say, well, you know, somebody will bring up something that might be considered historical, and they just talk about it, and it's cool. Then you got the players who are so stuck on it. And then at some point you have to say, well, this is either my game or if this is a fantasy game.
Do you have the problem of people making assumptions based on history in your fantasy game?
Not as much anymore because...
But it has happened.
It has happened. And assumptions are...
It's happened to me.
Assumptions are okay, though. Just as it's the attitude that goes with the assumption.
It's like the whole... like in my gaming world, the continent that most people... play on, the main continent, slavery is very, very common. And you'll have every time I turn around when I'm playing and there's someone new playing the game, they immediately go, oh, slavery is bad. And you look at them and go, why is it bad?
Because you've lived with it your entire life.
It's
interesting you bring that up, though. That's actually a very common theme is yes, back then slavery was very common, you know, ancient Rome, you know, in history, you had slavery.
Slavery was a
socially accepted thing. Now it's not a socially accepted thing, so people immediately bring their modern biases into the game when they play it and say, oh, well, I got to be against slavery. Because if I'm for slavery, everyone's going to think lesser of me.
Well, see, the thing is, you know, there's some players, like, in my game system, when the first time you played in my world, that's the first thing you did, too. You did the whole, slavery is bad. And then I went, well, you've lived with slavery your whole life. And you went, slavery isn't bad.
Correct. There
well,
you go.
And
then the rest of the players decided they were going to free all the slaves. And it's like... Yeah.
Well, that's fine, too.
You guys have lived with it your whole life.
But we have to also, if we're going to go along that line, just because it was socially acceptable, there's people that didn't like it.
Well, of course there is. But the thing is for the way that the way that they were raised in a society that... slavery is a very common thing. The fact of the matter is, if we lived in a world where slavery was a very common thing, you would not think twice about going past the slave markets. You may not like the fact that people are being sold into slavery. You may not like the fact that people are being worked to death with no free will. But the fact of the matter is you're not going to sit there and go by yourself and try to release the slaves to free the slaves.
Well, I would slightly disagree with that particular one, though. Depends on... the person. It depends on a lot of things because that's why society changed the way it is. But I know what you're saying, and I agree with it. People can't seem to
wrap their heads around a difference.
Well, I think what it comes down to is if you run into like an NPC who is a slave trader or whatever. I know we're sort of going off on the slavery tangent, but this is good. You have, like, if you had an NPC that deals in slaves, a slave trader, I think instantly the players are going to have a dislike of them.
Yeah.
Just on a basic level.
A good example is we had a bunch of refugees, mm-hmm. and they're hiding in a church. And stopping outside was a slave trader. Mm-hmm. Now, the refugees obviously didn't like the slave trader because, well, they didn't want to become slaves.
Right.
And the other player was like, okay, slaves, I can't really do anything about it. But one of the players decided that their particular character was so against it and attacked the slaver.
Okay.
So what did the slaver do? Well, he ended up attacking the refugees and trying to kill the whole party. And when we traced it back, it was all because, well, slavery is bad. Well, why is slavery bad for your character? You know, you could have left well enough alone because you had people to protect. Mm-hmm. Well, and just as, you know.
And people's impression of a medieval society in a fantasy game, I think, is entirely colored by modern fiction, by modern movies.
Yeah, you know, movies and TV. Books. And
so, obviously, you know, you want to have the hero who is against, you know, against slavery, against, you know, the church having too much power, that sort of thing. But historically speaking, some of that stuff was not a bad thing.
Well, and
it
also,
wasn't viewed as a bad thing by the majority of the population.
By the majority, yeah.
That person is probably a minority in the sense that they are against the church. Well, the church has brought light to the world. Mm-hmm. So why are you against the church? Well, I'm against the church because they're teaching this. Is there something else that we can be taught? Well, yeah. Well, I don't understand it because I'm a serf who's lived under this church for, you know. So you're obviously
a
terrorist.
What you're saying is heresy, you know.
Yeah, you're obviously a terrorist.
Right. Well, I mean, that's a good parallel. Is I mean, the ancient terrorists were pretty much heretics.
Now, you know? If the heretic goes, "Hey,
Christians, you
I
know,
went over
Christians
and
in you know turn of the millennium,
I went over and beat on that lord that was raping and killing your people and stole his gold. Here you go. Oh, okay, I understand that.
Yes, but you know,
but why are you still complaining about the church?
Here's this. Say you have a king who is nice to all of his people, except he's not nice to one particular group of people. Does that make him evil to that group of people?
Obviously, that group of people are witches.
Oh, he's sinister and nasty. Just look at, you know, Edward Longshanks from Braveheart. You know, the movie depicts him as a horrible, horrible person when in fact he was a very, very good king.
Well, and look at most castles had a dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
You could be the most law-abiding whatever, but your enemies rot in the dungeon. That's what they do.
Because, yeah, if they're out and about, they could be trying to do the same thing to you. So.
Exactly. So, but at the same time, I don't think historical assumptions are bad. Because when a person approaches a game, and I try to do this with some of my races, it's like, I have an idea, but I also want my players to approach it and play something some way. And then if we come together, you go, you know, in this type of
going to the whole thing of communication.
Yeah, exactly. So they assume that, you know, historically, if I say this person's like a Viking, well, historically they act like this. Well, in most cases, yes, but in this case, they act like this. Then you come to a common understanding.
I think as a GM, it's fairly unrealistic to sit there and expect to have the entirety of this culture mapped out and to say, okay, this is what this government is. This is how they do things. These are all the senators. These are all the, you know, the lords, the ladies. This is the king. I think it's unrealistic for that amount of work to go into
the
campaign sometimes.
And it depends
unless it's the centralized, like if it's Tallis. If you were going to be stuck in one place for the entirety of the game, you might want to have a good idea of what's going on.
Or a good example is Legend of the Five Rings.
That's a good
one. Legend of the Five Rings is so based on Oriental and Japan and, you know, that if, depending on the GM, your death could come very swiftly because you said, now you're hoping your GM will say, well, based on the skills you have, you know you would act like this.
Yes.
And then you play it accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's unfair for a GM to say, okay, we're playing Legend of the Five Rings. All right, well, I'm a peasant, and I'm running around with a samurai sword, and then a samurai shows up and guts me. Well, how? Maybe I don't know anything about the cult. Why did he just attack me? It's because you're a peasant carrying a samurai sword.
Yeah.
So well, I didn't know that.
Allowed to use martial weapons.
You should know the history.
That's why I really stress, I think, having a character creation session for a game is so vital to a campaign.
Well, yeah.
Rather than sit down and play that first session, sit down and make the characters and make sure everyone is on the same page as to what the society is like. That way no one's coming in with these preconceived notions. You know, it's like, okay, well, you guys are going to be starting in this area. Slavery is very common. The church is in, it's a church hierarchy. The church is the real power behind the throne. This is what's going on.
Yeah.
Getting into fantasy is you even have other stuff you can add to it. And you sort of touched on this a little bit with magic. Because obviously magic is a big deal. I mean, magic fundamentally changes things, I think.
And each GM has a different way about it. Some think of magic as a nuclear weapon, so no one's going to use it in battle. Right. I think of it as, I have the most magic, so I'm going to create weapons out of it and destroy you before you can...
Right.
Before you can do that to me.
You're thinking more as like 80s Cold War. Or 80s...
The Cold War in general. Well, because if I had a school of magic, my government would pour money into it to train battle mages to go out in the battlefield and kill people.
Yeah, and drop fireballs on the enemy's battalions.
That would be some of your special forces.
Yeah,
right there.
Just because the common folk out in the middle of Bofinky Dinky Village are like, oh, it's magic. It's like the government is like, yeah.
That's another thing.
We built this big old magic school, and now you have healing potions and all that sorts of stuff.
What I'm saying is you go into a fantasy game, you go into that setting, and say you're in a small village, you know, I mean, and you pop out a fireball. The GM needs to try to figure out how ingrained is magic in society to say, oh, well, they'll look and they go, oh, it's a fireball.
Yeah.
Or to, oh my god, he summoned a fire demon.
Yeah, it depends on, and it could depend on each society.
Yeah, it's always,
burn him!
Or it could be...
It's a witch!
I'm not sure what if he's a wizard or an evil priest, but he's burned down my house with fire.
Right.
That sprung from his hands.
You brought it up, it's like the common peasant might not know the difference between arcane magic and divine magic.
Or they might not know the difference between, more specifically, the types of divine.
It's happening in your game, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or even...
Just because I like to screw with people.
It totally depends on the setting, too.
I remember that one session where I came in and I told people I was a paladin. And it just happened in that town, paladins were not liked.
Well, it was because your brother had just been in the town claiming he was a paladin and torched half the town.
Well, there is that.
And your brother is your identical twin.
Yeah, he's a dick.
Well, actually, no,
he's not, but you don't realize
and
that.
And most people aren't going to really... I mean, if you just look at normal society... Just out tilling the fields, they're like, I don't know what a paladin is. Maybe some holy, I don't know, troublemaker.
That's certainly all about they know fits is with most paladins I know.
The local mage last year, you know, got rid of the rat problem, so he's helpful.
Right.
Or he helps us grow our plants, and you know, instead of, but over there, this guy is summoning. Horrible creatures, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not really what the magic is; it's how it's being used.
Right. So I guess
if you went into medieval Europe and you started casting fireballs around, it's going to be interesting.
I think we can all agree that historically, the Inquisition would have been a lot different if. Magic was real. If there was clerical magic and there was arcane magic, hell, the Inquisition would probably still be going on at that point. At this point, I mean, there's so much to look at when you're taking a fantasy game and you're applying history to it. I'd say best thing to do is pick and choose.
Well, yeah, and it's nice to be able to say, hey, this group of people really acts like such and such in most.
I'm not saying you need to go sit down and write a dissertation
on,
you know, what this fantasy culture is like.
And don't be the player who a history lesson is okay.
Well, I'd say,
but if you ultimately force it,
know what the differences are,
and also don't castrate the other players if they actually don't know the history that you're trying to involve. I mean, you get that a lot. It's like because you don't know where the person's coming from, they ridicule you and treat you like dirt.
You cannot expect the other players to know all that stuff. Even if you put it in a handout, we love handouts. We love, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, read them.
Yes,
please.
Primers are awesome.
But you know, some of us have other things we have to store in our brains, like you know, school stuff and
not to
stuff,
mention. When we, a lot of us, when we play a game, we want to know what the society is like, and then we want to play someone who's different because we can't be different in
we are playing,
actual
you
society.
You are playing, you know, someone who is above and beyond the average person.
Yeah.
You are playing.
You don't want to play just the stuck up noble who's going to stick with everything that all the other nobles do. You want to be the stuck up noble who's.
Who wants to run a brothel. Right.
Possibly run a brothel, or who is actually like, you know, a superhero at night.
Yes.
Yeah.
You don't want to be just the... I mean, I always like the characters who kind of look at society and go, this is stuck up, and this is what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is great.
You know, classic examples is like Zorro. Granted, he's a fictional character, obviously, but, you know, he, during the day, was, you know, Don Diego de la Vega. He, you know, went around with the rich dons of California and, you know, wined and dined, and then at night he was Zorro fighting against them, you know? That's a good you know thing there where you have your players really the players are all the star of their own story.
Mm-hmm. The interesting thing about that is the duplicity of his nature because I mean he's living two separate lives at the same time.
And also if you just play somebody who's part of the society, you're probably not going to do much.
No, you're not. You're going to go to work. If you play someone who follows everything, every single piece of the society, the way the society works, always, you're never going to do anything because, you know, the society dictates that you stay and you farm and you don't make waves and you don't do this and you don't
do
that.
His father was a farmer. His father before him was a farmer, et cetera, et cetera.
Right? You will be a farmer as well, you know, and adventurers are like, no, I don't want to be that way. But the thing is
I want to go be a fighter and
punch orcs in the face.
But the punch orcs in the head.
But the thing is like, you know, players also have to understand and realize that...
That's another thing. Monsters. You know? And historically speaking, obviously, we only had ourselves, other humans, to deal with. I mean, how does that change when, you know, when the Black Forest is full of orcs, you know?
Yeah, great. That's just what I wanted to see. Oh look! Oh, great!
Yes, the Romans had their you know their barbarian issues with the Goths and the and all that. But imagine how annoyed the Romans would be dealing with like orcs, which are you know what 8 feet tall.
Well,
no, they're not that tall. They're like 6.5 feet tall. But yeah, big guys
compared to the Romans, who were like you know two feet taller. Than
well,
five
I mean,
foot from some inches
on Earth. You just look at it this way on Earth. All the monsters
technology.
Were human, and look how we act.
Mm-hmm.
So make the world a lot more crowded.
Yeah.
We're still going to act the same way. But then you have all these other things that are either going to act worse or better. Worse is kind of difficult, but it can get there. I mean, an orc eating somebody is pretty twisted.
But it's not something that you wouldn't put back.
It gets to the food chain issue because in a fantasy game, humans aren't necessarily at the top of the ladder. You know?
Oh, God, no. No, we are...
Usually they're not in a fantasy campaign.
Yeah,
Usually in a fantasy campaign, they're the most, you know, they're the most widespread. They're everywhere, but I'd say predominantly you have elf kingdoms, you have dwarf kingdoms, and you have dragons running around, you know, that are... Like, hi, I've been alive for 1,000 years. What are you doing? I knew I don't like you. I'm going to go hang out for 100 years and come back and you'll be gone.
Yeah.
And
I've eaten more of your people than, you know.
Yeah,
and each place is going to have to, each campaign is going to have to handle it differently. Like, Tolkien is a very good example of basically it was humans' time. When Lord of the Rings and such, the elves were getting ready to go. The dwarves, you know, barely seen because it was humans. You know, you could play that route or you could play... You know, it just really depends, but it's kind of difficult since we only have humans that we are aware of.
Mm-hmm.
So we can only play off of what we know.
Mm-hmm. I think also important that is try not to think on a global scale. try to think more regionally.
Yeah. Most people didn't know what was down the street because there wasn't streets.
They didn't know what was down.
Magic changes that.
Magic can change that depending on the society, depending on who controls the magic. And as if magic is secretive, but at the same time, that's why I like the regional
magic.
Magic for the rich. Why can't somebody with enough money go, you know what? I have so much money, I'm going to become a lich.
Yeah.
Goes find some people to train him, and he becomes a lich.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? And I used to run into that type of kind of wall of people going, well, you know, they'd give me some weird, well, they wouldn't do this, they wouldn't do this. It's like, well, why not? Why wouldn't the army have healing potions?
That would be stupid not to have your soldiers have healing potions, especially if you have the church backing
you. If you can
because,
do it.
No, yeah.
Because they're going to be getting them going, the less soldiers we lose and the more that they lose, the more easily we win.
And
so
why,
if we can keep our soldiers alive by having them guzzle healing potions,
why in a fantasy world you can't have a a huge city of millions that would have a magic shop or multiple magic shops? Unlike the village,
should have tons of magic shops.
Yeah, but then the village that's 100 miles away in the middle of nowhere, they may not have anything.
Well, they may have a general store, but more than likely anything that might even be remotely magical is going to be so ungodly expensive that the average adventurer is going to look at it and go, oh, unless we really need it, let's say no.
I look at it.
Like a small town would even have it.
Yeah, I look at it.
Like a bunch of adventurers come sauntering into town. It's like, we have this magic helmet we'd like to sell for, you know, 10,000 gold.
I've got a cow.
That's worth more than the town is.
We'll give you a cow.
I look at it in the way of technology.
Mm-hmm.
Turn of the century.
Right.
In the cities, guess what you had? You had technology. You could drive down the road or ride your horse down the road, and you still have people shooting each other with six shooters.
Yep.
I mean, just things like that. Even nowadays, depending on what state you go to or what country you go to, you still have peasants out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
But serfdom is not dead.
But we have cell phones, so why can't magic? And I mean, that's how I look at it.
Well, the thing is that. The point that I was trying to make is the more historical accuracy you add to a game, the more the players tend to rebel against the trappings of the game, because what's historically accurate is not what they grew up with, and players bring their very narrow preconceived notions into the game when they start the game. So if they don't think slavery, they don't think slavery is a good thing, they think slavery is bad. They think monarchies are a horrible, terrible thing so that they shouldn't exist. They come into the game world is historically accurate. You have a monarchy running everything backed by the church, and you have slavery as a common thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, you know, for lack of a better term, and you're going to have to edit me for this, but they're going to go eight
Smurf
wild and be like, well, this is horrible, we have to destroy the whole thing. And it's like, oh, come on, you're an adventurer. This is something that you're used to seeing. You've grown up with this. You may not like it, but the thing is that doesn't necessarily give you the right to go and destroy the whole society as a whole because you don't agree with it.
Well, one of the funniest things, though, is...
No, it's great for you to try, and it's fun to watch them fail, but the thing is it doesn't give them any right to do so. And half the time, what happens is you ask, well, why are you like that? And you're like, well, because I am. That's not a good enough reason.
Mm-hmm.
If you hate slavery... Give me a specific reason. Like when I was a child, you know, the town I lived in was raided by barbarians, and they killed everybody and enslaved all the children. I barely managed to escape, but all my friends and my siblings were all dragged off into slavery for God knows what means. I hate slavery.
I'm an ex-slave, you know.
Or I'm an ex-slave. Yeah, I earned my freedom by, you know, such and such. Give a reason. Don't be like, well, because I don't like it. Well, I don't care if you don't like it as a person. Give me a reason why you're here, why your character doesn't like it.
One of the funniest things...
And it better be
things,
a good reason.
I would point this out to players. It's like, what are you going to do in the wilderness? Well, I'm going to try to civilize it. And who's going to be in charge? Well, I'm going to be in charge. So, are you going to build yourself a castle? Yeah. Are you going to be in charge of the peasants? Yeah. So, you're going to be a lord, right? Well, yeah. So, it's a feudal society, right? Yeah. So, why don't you like the king?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you're going to do the same thing.
Would you prefer the king not be there and have mass chaos?
It's like...
Because anarchy don't work.
If you don't like the king because you want to be the king, okay, fine. That's understandable.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If
the only reason you don't like the king is because you want to be the king, that's a good reason.
That's a good reason.
Yeah.
If he killed your brother, that's a good reason.
Yeah.
If he's not the actual bloodline king, that's even a good reason.
Yeah, if you don't want him to be king because
you don't like monarchies.
But you don't want to abolish the monarchy, you know?
Yeah, that doesn't quite
it's
work.
It's like the monarchy's been around for centuries at this point. You just want to go, well, let's get rid of that and become a republic.
Yeah, you don't know really the idea. Now, you could have someone who's very educated who is thinking of those types of things. But guess what? You're going to still be the leader until you can get your peasants to understand voting.
As a player, I'd obviously talk to the GM, and if you want to have those sort of leanings, maybe the GM will work with you and say, okay, well, there's a movement. There's a republic movement going on because you're not the only one thinking like this.
Yeah.
Because if you are the only one thinking like this, then
you're probably insane.
You're an idiot. You know, it's like, or you're, I don't like slavery, so I'm going to go free all these slaves. Well, logically, a sane person isn't going to do that in a society where everyone has slaves
but
and
I,
there's open slave
I
markets.
I will point out, though,
but you know what's funny?
You might
but
stand on a soapbox and say, I don't like slavery,
well, yeah.
if that is not illegal
But I will
to do
point
that.
Out in, like, in actual
story, though.
Life, though, that type of thing has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Where someone just writes a book about, I don't like this, we should change it. Or, I'm going to help these people out.
Well, yeah. There's no problem doing that. But the fact of the matter is, it's like, I did this. This reminds me of a story in one of my games. Actually, it was before I met you, so you weren't in it. But I was running a game, and the players...
You being me, Ethan, by
yeah,
the way.
The players stumbled across a slave market that was doing a slave auction. And the players were like, we're going to free all the slaves. And like, guys, slavery is normal here. You know that. I've talked to you about this before. Doesn't matter. We don't like slavery. We're going to free all the slaves. So they freed all the slaves. And the town guard promptly came and arrested them because they just stole merchandise.
No.
And then in the end, they ended up having to work off the debt for the hundreds of thousands of gold that they lost for that slave trader.
Some people have a hard time adjusting to it's like this person came into town and this person killed one of my slaves. Well, that's my property. It cost me money. And legally speaking... In common law and in medieval law, it was okay. Well, you killed one of my slaves. You owe me, you know, three oxen and a cart,
or even
or whatever,
even
you know?
Beyond
or give
that,
me one of your slaves.
You got into a fight with my son.
It
you
wasn't,
killed him.
What I'm saying is, it's not murder.
Yeah, it's not. Well, even in the case though, just in normal society, it's like you got into a fight with my son and you killed him. Now I could just have you killed off, or you owe me this much money because he was a freed person.
I mean, the ideal thing to think of historically is people weren't equal. Is if you killed a noble, that was a really bad thing. If you killed a peasant...
Might not be, depending on what the peasant does.
Depending on what the peasant does, yes.
The blacksmith
killing
is going to be...
would piss off the noble, because it's like, that's an investment here. You pay me money, and you go away. Or you have to go do 30 days hard labor.
That's why, and it chafes me too, but it should actually... And it makes sense, because I think it chafes a lot of players. When the adventuring party runs into these nobles, the noble treats them, yeah, you have swords, I don't care.
Yeah.
You're from a different, your social class is nothing. Oh yeah, you can beat me in a fight? That's meaningless.
Uh-huh.
I am of, you know, this
I
bearing.
I
am of noble
and
birth.
I have the law
I am therefore,
me.
And I'm therefore better.
Lands.
Now, as
you're
a player,
poaching.
As a player, when someone brings that up, especially if you're playing kind of the against a society, that chafes, and you're like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, well, watch this. Let me burn down your house.
Generally, players don't like to be, you know,
told what to do.
By NPCs, and it's like, well.
But sometimes they have to be.
Nobles are going to do that.
Yes, they are.
Nobles are bastards.
And, it might rub you wrong way.
Yeah.
Not necessarily going to rub your character the wrong way, because your character will expect it.
It depends on the character, too, though.
Yes.
Granted. Yeah, there are certain characters that it will rub the wrong way. Barbarians being told what to do are probably not going to react.
Smash.
Yeah.
Unless it's like another barbarian chief.
Yes.
Yes.
Who's like, if you don't do this, I'm going to smash your head.
Yeah, that's what they understand. But if they run into like a what they would call
like,
a civilized noble, they're going to look at it and go,
put them in the battle circle.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if they run into like a civilized, you know, a town noble, they're not going to understand a single thing. It's like, he tells them something or tells them off, and the barbarian's going to go, to the ring, we fight this, and you know, we fight this with hands. And the noble's gonna look at him and go,
"Well, that's
hard, so."
That's why,
yeah.
Like cities. Whenever I have a party going to a city, I just silently cringe because there's a set of laws, and while there's adventure, there's also just I don't care about the laws. I'm going to do whatever I want. And that doesn't work. Because the constable or the noble's guards or the king's guards or whoever do have to enforce the normal people's law.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on how historically accurate you want to be, all the players could leave without hands.
Yes.
try to steal something.
I remember there was a book where, I don't remember the name of the book, but basically these people got sucked into a fantasy realm.
Yeah, it's a Margaret Rice and Tracy Hickman series. And the player, they were playing a role-playing game.
Yeah, there was two thieves. One thief was like, oh, I'm going to steal from this noble.
Yeah, he tries to steal
his noble
purse.
Killed him.
Yeah, turns and it was like in the first 40 pages of the book, too.
Yeah, the noble just killed him.
Just turns around, pulls out a sword, and stabs him in the chest.
That's what you get. And nobody did anything.
Of course not.
Because he was the noble, and you were stealing from the noble, so you got caught.
You got killed.
The other thieves are like, well, you got caught. And the noble's like, well, you stole from me, when you might have gotten away with maybe a beating from stealing from someone else.
Yes.
Or just losing a hand.
Yeah. But yeah, I remember that. I remember that book series. I can't remember the name of it, but it wasn't a bad series of books.
No, it was a good series.
Because it threw the common preconceived notions of fantasy literature on its ear.
One thing we might want to talk about when it comes to historical accuracy, and this is something that I see and I always want people to think about just a little bit, is why is it that we kind of always, when we think of like a human, we normally think of a white human when it comes to a fantasy realm?
Mm-hmm.
That's just going to be
I'm saying it is good.
And I think that's kind of foolish to think about, because in a fantasy realm, unlike in our world, the color of your skin is probably going to be meaningless compared to where you're at.
Right.
Where are you from? Well, I'm from this place. Well, people from that place are below, you know, they're pieces of trash.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what color of skin they are, it's because they're from a certain location or
right.
a certain caste system. But if you look at most fantasy things, do you see very many? You don't. You mostly see white individuals.
European
individuals. I don't like that. I like being able to say, look, this human has...
You like more the Hyborian.
Yeah,
type.
It doesn't matter what color your skin is.
Who are, you know, dark skinned and
it's
like
from
that.
Where you're Indians from
and Aquilonians.
Yeah,
and
at this
Sumerians
point, this group of people is versus this group of people. The color of skin is just based on because of the environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's meaningless beyond that.
And I say, as a GM, don't be afraid to, you know, take stereotypes and turn them on their ear. It's like, yes, I think people are going to immediately think of. It's like, oh, we come across some dark skin, some black individuals in a fantasy game. Oh, they must be tribal. Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Could entirely be something else, you know.
Yeah.
Don't be constrained by, you know, Earth history, you know.
Yeah, because one of the things that people commonly forget is that the cradle of civilization started in Africa.
Yeah.
So when they think about, oh, Egyptians and stuff, you always see these white people. And no.
Mm-hmm.
No, Egyptians were more along the lines coloration wise of
Arabic,
and then
you
have the Numidians that were south of them that were
our
very
perceptions and our conceptions are tainted by how we live now.
We just think the Numidians were
south of the Egyptians, and they were a black kingdom, African American king or African kingdom.
Or the Zulus.
They're more tribal than
I know
societal. But the Nubians actually had a civilization, a culture, and people,
there
some
were
people state
so
that it
many
predated
African,
the Egyptians.
There were so many African kingdoms.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. That's why
Syria.
I really like that African hand. The African
Niambe.
Yes, that's a great setting because it brings something different in there. Is there some tribal stuff? Yes, but it's just a great series. So I mean. That
the
is
Assyrians.
Something you can.
That was what they were, the Assyrians.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't think of the culture.
But basically, if you can get your players to think like that, break those assumptions. You know, I mean, where is your human character from? Well, I'm from the desert. Are you sure you want to be pale European?
Yeah, exactly.
You're gonna get a little burned. Well, is there gonna be any cultural thing if I'm darker than normal? No, they don't care. You may get some odd looks if you go to the north.
It depends on It depends on where you go. Think of the Crusades. You know, it's like whereas in England, it's, if you were a Moor, they're like, oh, you're a barbarian. But it was entirely flipped around when you're down in Jerusalem. You know, it's like, oh, you're a European barbarian.
You're still a barbarian.
Yeah,
no matter where you're from, you're not the common culture in the area. You're a barbarian.
Yeah, and it's entirely like one culture can think entirely different things of the other culture. It could be based
on your accent. What language are you speaking? Yeah. How do you sound? I mean, these are all historical things that we can kind of play around with. Or maybe on this world, you know, slaves are a different race entirely.
Right.
Maybe humanity has enslaved the dwarves. They're stupid to do so, but maybe they have.
The right height for drinks.
I guess, until it bites your hand off.
Depends on the dwarves. What if they're gully dwarves?
Gully dwarves don't count as dwarves. They're more of, I don't know, rodents.
Okay. It's good to know.
They're not really enslaved, except exterminated.
We should wrap this up. Any final thoughts?
Again, I go back to what I said at the beginning. Orcs with machine guns fighting knights with swords and full plate are cool.
Final thoughts?
Yeah, no problem. There's nothing wrong with adding historical accuracy to your fantasy game. Just realize that you're going to run into preconceived notions in your players, and you either need to help them get around them and roll with the punches.
You need to make it clear, you know, what the society is going to be like.
And work with your players.
Yes.
Don't just dump them out there because the players have different levels of understanding when it comes to history. Not to mention, when we play a game, most of us don't want to be stuck in one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the best analogy I can think of is understand that your players aren't going to stick to one specific path that you have laid out. There was an old test done with chimpanzee where a bunch of scientists created a room where there was six exits in it.
Mm-hmm.
They were positive there were six exits in it. They put the chimpanzee in there, and the chimpanzee found a seventh exit that they hadn't seen. You know, just let your players know what the setting's going to be like, what's normal.
Because chimps are evil.
It's perfect. Yeah,
as long as they're creating fires.
Perfect parallel between how players will go through an adventure that you create. That they're chimps, yes. All players are chimps. We'll be back after this.
Happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday 4th edition Dungeons and Dragons, happy birthday to you. 4th edition Dungeons and Dragons came out 1 year ago. It's a cute little boy, there is no doubt, but not everything has been as smooth as a proud parent might want. The Tome Show, in conjunction with Dungeon Mastering, Critical Hits, Gamers Haven, Sly Flourish, Chatty DM, and At Will, sat down and chatted with Chris Perkins and James Wyatt, the creative and design managers of 4th edition at Wizards of the Coast. They talked to us about how the first year of the new edition has gone, what could have gone better, and what we can expect in the second year of our favorite game. On Wednesday, June 10th, the internet is going to explode with blog posts, as well as full audio of the discussion on thetomeshow.com. Come to the party, you're all invited. 4th edition, 1 year later, at thetomeshow.com.
Happy birthday to you.
And we're back, and today in the fabulous three-parter, we're introducing a few new things. Nathan's going to give us a nice little update on what's up in the world of gaming. Jeremy's going to review Goodman Games' new level up, and I'm going to talk to you guys about Fat Dragon Games.
This just in, the news.
Well, I'm actually going to talk to you about a couple of things that have come up recently and that have come out or come to my knowledge. I don't know how new they are.
The new as of when we're recording this on May 12th, 2009. We're in 2009, just so people know.
Chaosium has some information posted on various different things. They have a new license for Call of Cthulhu for a company called Adamant Entertainment. And they're planning on bringing up, well, I don't know Adamant Entertainment, but Ethan's obviously doesn't like them. Well, now I know why Ethan doesn't like the company. I can understand why, and I can't say that I'm very excited now, unfortunately. But it looks like they're going to come out with a couple new settings for the game for Call of Cthulhu. I will reserve judgment until I read them, but more than likely I probably won't like them. They're also doing a sale right now, even as we speak, which is from now until, well, by the time you guys hear this, it's going to be over. It only goes till Monday, May 18th. But one of the interesting things is Chaosium has started to actually put up a lot of their BRP and Call of Cthulhu products in a PDF format on their actual store for a good chunk off what the retail price is for it. So if you've wanted to have several of the books but just couldn't justify paying the $40 for that hardcover copy of the Dreamlands, you can get it for, I think, $20 on the website. One of the other things to talk about where'd it go? No, I can't find it. Oh, yes. I don't know if any of you people know this gentleman, but those of us out there in the Chaosium that like Call of Cthulhu will know the name. Keith Herber, on March 13th, I'm sad that I didn't find about this until now, Keith Herber passed away in his sleep, and they don't know, as of the time of writing, they're not certain what the cause of his passing was. The thing that most people will recognize him for is actually the Arkham Unveiled handbook, which has just been re-released as H.P. Lovecraft's Arkham. Very prolific writer for various different things for Call of Cthulhu, early Call of Cthulhu releases, and other basic role-playing game or basic role-playing books. But yeah, he also helped create a Miskatonic River Press, which is a printing company that does a lot of mythos printing, story printing. So unfortunately, that's some bad news. I haven't heard a lot from the Wizards of the Coast, except for they're getting ready with they're in the process of getting ready the next Monster Manual and the next Dungeon Master's Guide, if I remember correctly.
Monster Manual looks pretty cool.
It's coming out soon, I believe.
Yeah, I will reserve judgment until after I've actually played 4th Ed D&D because, well, I'm slow, and there's lots of other systems that I really want to screw around with.
And I haven't had a chance to run them through fourth ed yet.
And D&D is not really high on my priority list, so sorry about that, guys. But eventually I'll get to it, and then I'll give you my actual opinion on it.
Monster Manual 2 is supposed to come out this month in May.
It does look neat.
By the time you hear this, it should be out.
It has some classic monsters.
Which will be nice.
More dragons.
Along the lines of online role-playing games, I don't know if many of you have heard this. This may not be very important to some of you, but for those of us who play computer games, this is like the holy grail. BioWare has announced that there will be no digital rights management in Dragon Age.
Mm-hmm.
Period. It'll have a disk check system. And no secure ROM. None of that stupid crap kills your computer.
Did you catch what Green Ronin released?
Huh.
Green Ronin is inked a deal with BioWare, and they're going to do a pen and paper version of Dragon Age.
That's awesome.
I haven't heard of Dragon Age.
Dragon Age is
the new BioWare RPG.
Yeah, on the computer only.
Speaking of KOTOR and, you know, the good stuff.
Yeah, pretty much every Jade BioWare Empire game that has come out has been.
Didn't they do? No, they didn't do the first Neverwinter Nights. That wasn't.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, they did.
They did Neverwinter Nights. They did Baldur's Gate Baldur's 1 and Gate, 2. They did two. Planescape
so,
Tournament.
There you go.
I wonder what system type thing it's going to be, though.
Completely their own system.
Probably going to be, yeah.
Well, that can either be good or bad.
From what I've seen, I can't talk about it.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you guys about it after we get done.
I'll have to just go to their site and look it up.
But so far, there's a lot of good stuff going on in the industry right now. I know I missed a bunch of stuff, and I do apologize. I've also been keeping my ear to the ground on various different. If you guys haven't figured it out by now, I'm really big into computer stuff. Period. And I've been keeping my ear. Yeah,
really.
I've been keeping my ear to the ground because there's
I have no idea.
A lot of the old gold, the gold box SSI games. There's as Ethan raises the devil horns, as is customary.
Pool of Radiance was awesome. Not Mithranor. Ruins of Mithranor was crap.
Yep.
But there's a group of people, because the products are so old, they're coming out of their copyright, you know, their length, which is 15.
They're coming into
public domain. And what people are doing is they're planning on taking the software.
Well, they're becoming abandonware, right. Not really coming into public domain.
Well, but they're already classified as abandonware by most people because SSI no longer exists.
Yeah.
But there's a group of people that are getting together that are trying to do free projects, open source projects, to recreate the games with updated graphics, updated engines, and updated systems, which means that we could see a Pool of Radiance, like the original Pool of Radiance, on 4th Ed D&D rule set.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, that actually would be awesome.
I saw that, and I was reading up on it.
Pool of Radiance was my first exposure to D&D in any way. So.
But the one that really caught my eye that I really liked the idea of was they're planning on redoing the Eye of the Beholder series, which was my first D&D experience.
Cool,
I really loved the old Eye of the Beholder
if
series.
If they made it, yeah, they need to upgrade it and update
well,
it.
It came out on, was it Game Boy Advance or DS?
Game Boy Advance.
And they did update it.
Yeah.
And then, it was the Game Boy Advance. It was the Game Boy Advance.
They did update it to third edition somewhat. Rules or something, I think.
Yeah. The combat was actually in third person, yeah. And you actually had it in tile-based for movement and stuff. It was not bad, but the thing was, it was really not that good either.
Yeah.
But yeah, that sounds interesting. I'm going to keep an eye on that and see what comes of that because, you know, a lot of those open source projects tend to fall apart and die.
Tend to languish for quite a while.
It takes a strong leader. Yeah. It takes a very strong leader for them to do it.
Yeah. That's the other thing. A lot of them get cease and desist orders. For those of you out there who love classic adventure games, it's been announced that there is a company that is going to be redoing King's Quest IV and updated graphics. So if you like the King's Quest series, keep an eye on that. I heard this is a little birdie speaking in my ear. I can't say, you know, I don't really want to say where I heard it from, but there is a little birdie who's whispering that someone is actually, that they're actually going to, there's a company that's planning on, well, not a company, a group of people that are planning on redoing a lot of the old Sierra adventure games, like the Black Cauldron and the old storybook ones, like the Dark Crystal, stuff like that. Updating them with new graphics and stuff and doing them in a more contemporary adventure style format, which will be interesting. Role-playing game wise, definitely guys keep your eyes open. Mass Effect is going to be out by the end of this year, or Mass Effect 2
still had problems with the first one.
I don't know anything about the second one yet, unfortunately, but apparently they're working very hard to expand upon the story and open it up. Dragon Age will hopefully be out this year. Yeah, that looks absolutely awesome.
And again, Green Ronin Publishing is going to do a pen and paper version of it.
There's lots of cool stuff going on online. If you guys like Battlefield has a free online game come out. It's a third-person shooter. It's in beta right now. It's open beta, called Battlefield Heroes. Go up and sign up for your key. The only problem is right now the Punkbuster system is offline as they're doing some certain testing. So, get your video game recording software handy because what they're having people do is because they have no Punkbuster software and people are cheating out the wazoo. They want you to submit video clips of people cheating. When I was fiddling around with it this last weekend, there was one time when I got killed by a guy who was all the way across the map. He headshot me with a shotgun through the side of a building.
It's a pretty strong
shotgun. Yeah, it's a very impressive shotgun, one. Two, he headshot me.
With a really long barrel.
Yeah, maybe apparently. A sniper shotgun.
But yeah, you know, keep your video recording material or your video recording tools set and ready to go for when stuff like that happens, because that's how they're banning people who are cheating right now until they get Punkbuster back up and running. But
like how it's called Punkbuster.
Yeah, because they're punks.
Mm.
But the thing is, the game itself is very fun. The players are very, very good. So, you know, be prepared to get shot all to hell a lot. But it's definitely worth picking up because it's very goofy. They don't say Axis and Allies. It's the Royals and something else.
Right.
And it's obviously British versus German. But definitely check it out if you like that. But I digress. I can't think of anything else right off the top of my head. So we're going to go ahead and move it on over to, I'm guessing, Ethan.
Yep.
Once my perfect world was gone, I knew you ruined everything in the nicest
Dave. All right, I'm going to talk to you about a company called Fat Dragon Games, sort of my RPG Now pick. Go to our website, CanadianCrusaders.com, and click on our RPG Now links because we're affiliates.
That's the only way you can get to it.
That's the only way you can get to anything on RPG Now is by going
through
our website.
It was deleted.
Yes.
Hit by a nuclear bomb.
Something like that. Go through our website. There's a company out there called Fat Dragon Games, which does tiles and terrain, paper tiles and paper terrain that you, as PDFs, you can purchase. I recently picked up a copy of the Caverns set, or the Cliffs and Caves set, something like that, from RPG Now, and I spent quite a lot of time putting together some of their cliffs, basically, so I could use them for Deadlands. And I, for one, was very happy with how it worked out. They are very well done. They don't kill your printer. They're the right price. They're cheap. And they're a PDF.
Cheap. They're not cheap. They're affordable.
They're affordable.
Yeah.
They're not cheaply done.
No, they're done
very
well.
Nice. They're done very well, and they're very economically priced. What I like about them is that the PDFs are fairly easy to navigate and fairly easy to print out. What I liked about them was that you could... They come in both black and white versions and color versions. They also come in, if they have a top, because it's designed for tabletop gaming. A lot of it's going to be very abstract. You're not going to have weird, like, rounded tops on things like that unless you have... unless it's a statue or something like that. But you can either have a... 1-inch grid on the top of the map, or you could have it no grid if you're going to use it for just basic terrain. But they have castle sets, they have cave sets, they have sci-fi sets, they have city sets for the superhero games, and they just announced they got a license for Call of Cthulhu products, so they're going to start doing Call of Cthulhu.
The ultimate GM screen.
And they have an awesome ultimate GM screen that's about $9. Mm-hmm. And granted, you have to print it out yourself and then assemble it, but I for one hadn't actually taken too close of a look at it, because what it is, it's just a three-paneled castle, basically. Like a castle wall, and the two parapets, there's a parapet at each corner, or the interior corners, and there's a dice chute on each of them. One, you drop the dice in the top, and they come out on the player's side. The other one, you drop them, they come in down the GM side. There's also little shelves on the back end for miniatures.
And a place to hide minis, too.
It's kind of cool, actually. And really, putting them together effectively is you have to put some effort into it. Get yourself some cardstock. Get yourself an X-Acto knife and a cutting mat, like a paper cutting mat, so... one that is actually meant for cutting paper and using the X-Acto knife on. Self-healing, of course. Get yourself some clear tape, some glue. I like using the glue dots, but also the glue craft sticks are great. And also, it recommends that for the bases, you use foam core, and that keeps it very stable. I'm very happy with how the cliff set turned out that I got.
I thought so. It was pretty neat.
As long as you put it together, follow the instructions, score it, fold it correctly, you have to spend a good amount of time on it, and don't go crazy like me and build about, you know, a dozen cliff sections. But it is very cool. The nice thing, especially for us, is if you're miniatures gamers, is you reuse them. They're done in a modular fashion, so you can rearrange them in different ways and whatnot. And they even come with an interior tile layout PDF, basically, that has sample maps that basically fit inside the section that you have. It's a very interesting company. They do a lot of great stuff, and again, they're just, I think the price is right, so check them out through RPG Now, and
they just
through our
came
website.
Out with they just released apparently today or yesterday. They released their Easy Dungeons Mechanical Traps set, which includes this is just traps, just so you know, for dungeons: flowing acid trap, flowing water trap, ceiling blade trap, circular saw floor trap, two versions, fire trap, two sizes, floor spike trap, lava pit, and several other ones. Mm-hmm. Now, these are three-dimensional little things that you build from a PDF, just so you guys know.
Yeah.
The price on it is $3.99.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff is just priced right. It really is. They have a really cool set for, like, inns for medieval buildings.
City
but they
interiors.
Also have, like, spaceships. Like, they have this...
Resilience.
Yeah, Resilience, which is essentially, it looks like the fire. It looks like the Firefly.
It does.
ship. And they did that, obviously, on purpose. But they have terrain. They do have a few RPG products that they sell. But mainly I'm focusing on their terrain stuff because they have a great amount of stuff for
Warhammer. It'd be great.
It's perfectly sized for Warhammer.
It's 28 millimeter size.
Yeah, but they've got stuff perfect for modern day campaigns, for mech based campaigns.
Yeah, easy battlefields.
Easy battlefields. They have stuff that's just perfect for obviously for fantasy, for sci-fi, for. If you're doing a Star Wars game, if you're doing a pulp game, they actually have some Hollow Earth Expedition sets.
I like the Hobbit holes.
Yes, the little Hobbit holes, that sort of thing. And then they have tile sets, which are basically like dungeon tiles, but ones that you get in PDF format and you can print out, and it won't
as many
kill
as
your printer
you
as much as other things were.
I'm really grooving on this Ultimate Game Master screen.
Mm-hmm. It's really neat stuff. Check them out, fatdragongames.com, or go to our website, canadiancrusaders.com, and go to RPG Now.
But that's the only way to get to RPG Now is going through our website.
Yes, or else your computer will explode.
Yes.
The review.
All right, well, this is Jeremy. I'm doing a review on Level Up, which I had to get from RPG Now, because unfortunately Tabletop did not have it, which I was very saddened by this.
We love Tabletop, but their new employee is kind of a dumbass.
He's already had complaints lodged against him.
But they did not have it, so I just downloaded it. Now, Level Up is Goodman Games' new 4E only magazine. It's about 60 pages, and for the most part black and white, though I did notice a few of the ads were color. There are quite a few ads, but they're not really that distracting. And it's only $4. I mean, $4 for a 4E only magazine is nice. And I don't have to sign up with the Dungeon website. Or Wizards website, excuse me. I don't have to sign up monthly. I can just go on and buy one as I want. The first article in it is... Well, actually, let's start with the artwork on the front. The artwork on the front is kind of your classic, old-school woman with very, very little clothing. Might be kind of sexist, but... That's what old school games had.
It's done by it's done by a very good artist who has done a lot of covers for Green Ronin.
Yeah, so it really
it's
is
not. It's not Avalanche Press.
No, it's not Avalanche Press. It's very well done, but anyway, you open up the magazine, or on my computer, turn the page.
Right.
I guess just click on the button.
Actually, that cover's not bad. I mean, she's demonic.
No, I didn't say it was bad. It's just your normal, scantily clad, demonic type woman.
Yeah, but the thing is demonic women have the right to be able to be scantily clad because, one, they're demons, and two, they're demons.
Well, I don't think we need to go into the conversation about, most women have the right to be scantily clad whenever they want. But
yeah, but the thing is unlike heroes being scantily clad, which is ridiculous because it's like, I have an AC of 35 and I'm wearing a chainmail bikini. Yeah, right. I'm going to stab you in the stomach where you have no armor and you die.
Sweet.
Right. Anyway, so back to Level Up. After you get past the first picture, which is pretty sweet, the first thing in there is actually an adventure, which I'm not going to go too in-depth. It's a very good adventure. It's fairly short. It would be a nice starting off to something else. basically about some temporal magic gone awry and a giant and ogres and my favorite, dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs rock.
They actually talk about behemoths because D&D has decided you can't have them be called dinosaurs. They have to be behemoths.
Right.
So Level Up was nice enough to bring some of the classics back, like Triceratops, which is my favorite. He has a behemoth name. I don't really remember what it is. It's kind of, I don't care, because it's Triceratops. And they have a Tyrannosaurus Rex. I think his name is like the giant death lizard or something like that. Actually, in Level Up, they have a naming list. You can roll randomly for cool names for monsters. They have a couple other articles. One is about a new god, a god of war, kind of along the lines of the old 3.5 god of war. Who's the noble one? Heronius. Somewhat kind of like that. That article was okay. Then the article I really digged, in addition to the dinosaur one and the adventure, was the one about the weapons. They actually came up with three feats for a couple different weapons. And they had, like, the axe and the mace.
Mm-hmm. It's, oh gosh, let me find it here. Agazar's advice for adventurers.
Yes, it's just cool things you can do with weapons by taking certain feats for 4E. It's really nice. I do. I'm hoping that the next one will bring out things like swords and stuff beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
They had questions. The D20, it says, or is it D20 questions? It's just basically you write in your questions and they answer them. Overall, I mean,
yeah,
I don't...
It's D20 questions. The whole magazine is 4th ed.
It's an all 4... D20. Yeah, it's complete 4th ed. My thing is, though, I didn't like the black and white. For a PDF, I wish it was in color. But I go back to dinosaurs. It has dinosaurs. What can make it better, really? They're well done, too. So it's only $4, guys. Go out and check it out. RPG Now, get to it through our site. Check it out. They have dinosaurs.
We like dinosaurs.
Gamers Attic Attack! We have dice of every stripe, any color scheme and shape you can imagine. Exclusive dice, gold-plated dice, blank dice, label dice, cheat dice, D8 ability dice, crystal dice, time dice within dice dice, and jumbo foam dice for when you feel the inescapable urge to pelt your fellow players or annoying commercial announcers. And that's just a few of them! We sell enough dice to form a high-intensity plastic bridge from the Earth to the Moon. What's more, any order over $30 gets $3 off when you use the coupon code RADIO. Who wants a set?
I do.
Who else?
Me.
Anyone else?
Why are you ignoring me?
I'm not ignoring you. I'm cutting you off.
What?
You order a new set every day.
So?
Is there a 12-step program for Diceaholics? Because you, sir, have a problem.
That's really strange of you to say.
Green frosted, red speckled, violet glitter, blue translucent. You couldn't say no to these beauties if you wanted to.
I'm not an addict. I could stop collecting marbles anytime I like.
Marbles? You haven't been buying marbles this whole time. You've been buying dice.
That explains why I keep losing the marbles tournament. Those 4- and 6-sided marbles aren't really all that great for rolling.
You're not only a dice junkie, you're dumb, son. Dumb.
So can I get a set?
What'll it hurt? Sure.
Woohoo! Marbles!
Remember, folks, use the coupon code RADIO to get $3 off any order over $30 at gamersattic.com.
It's awesome like that.
We are awesome like that. And we do have some random encounters today.
About dinosaurs?
Sadly, no. Sadly, they're not called dinosaurs anymore, remember? They're behemoths.
That is true.
That's according to wizards.
We do have some feedback that I've managed to
generate
collect.
Yourself?
Yes, generate myself. Some of it about our Deadlands actual play. Which both of you play in, and I run, obviously.
We're playing Deadlands.
Got an email from a Joe McJoe. That is the name.
What's
that's
his
on
name?
Here. Joe McJoe.
Joe McJoe, huh?
Your name's Joe McJoe. That's pretty cool.
That is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So, Joe McJoe said in your Deadlands game, you mentioned Mormons and their wiggity underwear. The belief in the symbology of sacred garments spread to many of the Midwestern Indian tribes in the years after the Civil War. The movement was known in general areas as the Ghost Dance. By being pure Indians, some believed that they were protected from things like bullets, etc. I thought it was funny that bullets do not harm Little Bear and comments about underwear and how they can be linked. Yes, I do know about the Ghost Dance, and actually in Deadlands there is specific stuff about the Ghost Dance and Ghost Dancers. So he sent us an email back and said he thought he would like, it might be good to clarify his last email. He sent me an article about the ghost dancing. It's an alternate interpretation of the ghost dance tradition may be seen in the so-called ghost spirits, which were special garments rumored to repel bullets through spiritual power. It is uncertain where this belief originated, although some observers, such as James Mooney, have argued most likely source is the Mormon endowment garment. Despite the uncertainty of its origins, it is generally accepted that Chief Kicking Bear brought the concept to his own people, the Lakota Sioux, in 1890.
So he's not just emailing you about underwear, then. That's good.
No. He's not just emailing me about underwear. We got an email from Christopher Wilms, who actually wanted to talk about a few things here. So just listen to the most recent Gamers Haven podcast and have a few short comments. I noticed that the web link to episode 45 on our archive page was broken. I have since fixed that. So
you should break it again.
Anyone had a problem getting episode 45,
the link is
fixed. Second, he says, Nathan mentions that he likes the quote-unquote scheming aspect of Sylvester McCoy's doctor, and you'll find that McCoy's doctor started off as more of a clown but became more controlling in later years.
Yes, he did.
Third, I share your desire to see the DVDs. He's talking Doctor Who, obviously. The DVDs released in season box sets. When I first started buying Doctor Who on DVD, I was disappointed to see that the episodes were being released in onesie-twosie fashion, neither in chronological order nor in groups. But after watching the DVDs, I now see why. The Doctor Who restoration team, who do the technical restoration on the episodes, do incredible work, but they have a limited staff and a limited budget. You can actually visit their website at www.restoration-team.co.uk. Also, every Doctor Who DVD comes with a large amount of extras. They all have audio commentary from actors, producers, directors, and or writers, and most DVDs have documentaries, contemporary news clips, and photos taken on the set. I suspect that Nathan's online Netflix method of video consumption does not include these extras. A great example of this comes on the Ultimate Foe DVD, which is just two episodes long. I didn't much like the Ultimate Foe or anything in season 23, aka Trial of a Time Lord, for that matter.
The whole season was terrible, but yes, I have seen the extra supplements on that.
But on the same DVD is an hour-long documentary called Trials and Tribulations, which explains the turmoil happening behind the scenes. It didn't change my opinion about the story, but it helped explain why I didn't like it. Rumor has it that Warner Home Video intends to package the DVDs in season box sets once the final episode in any complete season is released. There's a good FAQ about it on the web, and I would give the link, but it's a long one. Keep up the good work, Chris Wilms.
Yeah,
I do know what he's talking about with that. I have seen that actually the version that I watched did indeed have that hour-long bonus feature. Whereas, yes, it helps you understand where they're coming from. It still doesn't cover the facts of why there was so much contention about Colin Baker playing the Doctor in the first place.
And we love extra features. So.
Yeah, it still doesn't explain fully why there was so much infighting about Colin Baker being the Doctor. It also didn't explain why they chose to make the certain choices that they made with production cuts when it came to actually filming the show.
Yep.
So what it comes down to, really, with the production cuts, it was, you know, you'll hear people say this all the time, people hate John Nathan Turner because he took it, and what he did was he changed the filmic format that they actually filmed it on into a higher quality film, but he reduced the entire rest of the budget for the show. You'll hear people say that, but the actual point is he didn't actually reduce the budget. He wasn't able to get the budget that he wanted to project for with the stories that they were writing. They take the stories and they take the projected budget to the BBC
And since we're talking about Doctor Who, Jeremy has left the table.
He take the projected...
Eyes has glazed over.
He take the projected budget costs, and BBC would not give them anywhere near as much money as what the projected budget cost was, and they'd have to make do. Which apparently, from what I understand from watching Red Dwarf and what's the other one? It's awesome. Blake's 7. Blake's 7. It's a very, very common thing that the BBC did during, yeah. from about 1967 all the way up to last year, for crying out loud. Probably this year, too, but I haven't heard anything about it this year. It's just a common thing.
Thank you, Chris, for the email. We got another email from Brian Chin. He said, I know you guys like to talk about your chronic lack of email feedback, so I figured I'd shoot you guys one. I've been enjoying the show since late last year and have gone through the Gamers Haven archives. You guys are an entertaining group with good chemistry and advice. I also have really been enjoying your Deadlands casts, which were particularly responsible for getting me into two Deadlands games. So I just wanted to let you all know that I've been enjoying the show and look forward to future podcasts. I love getting emails like this, so thanks, Brian. We're glad that we spiced up your gaming life with some more Deadlands, and we're glad that you're listening to the show.
Is he wearing the funny underwear? The Mormon underwear?
You know, that's a personal question, and I'm going to let him field that if that
he chooses. And yeah. the other gentleman might email us back about it.
That is true. That is true. And I got one more email from Joe McJoe, this time not about Wiggity Underwear. Joe McJoe said, do you think Savage Worlds would work well for a Fallout-type game? I've considered using D20 Modern or Cyberpunk 2020 to do so, but there would be some tweaking. And he also wanted to know what the name of the mod for Hero Lab was to grab updates for the Wizards of the Coast character generator.
And that's the Savage Worlds one, isn't it?
Yes, well, to address the first thing, first things first, go to savageheroes.com and look at their conversions. There's three conversions for Fallout. I sent you the links.
Yeah.
But you can go to savageheroes.com and find them.
Yeah.
Yeah, for if you want to go with an old school system, it would work good.
I think Savage Worlds works fine. It sort of depends on what kind of a feeling you're wanting to go with it. Yeah. So.
But if you want to go old school, one system that would work quite well for it that's old, I recommend the original system, not the updated one, is Gamma World. Because Gamma World takes place in a nuclear fallout future.
Well, there was a third edition version of it.
Yeah, but it was crap. That's why I said go with the
Cyberpunk
old version.
Cyberpunk wouldn't be bad either.
Cyberpunk wouldn't be...
It sort of depends on what kind of game you want to run. Yeah. Cyberpunk's going to be deadly. Oh,
which yeah. is exactly the, what the original Fallout... Was nasty. Which is exactly what the original Fallout was.
If you
want Fallout
to go more cinematic Star Wars style, then I'd go with Savage Worlds.
And if you want to go with just the... Because they have the crazy tables...
Calculus map, you could go...
Gamma World.
no, not Gamma World. GURPS or...
GURPS at least is fun, though.
GURPS is fun, but, you know...
Stab yourself in the eye with Palladium.
No, don't do that.
No, I wouldn't recommend that.
We like our listeners too much to recommend that.
But yeah, Savage Worlds, go to savageheroes.com and look at their conversion section. There's three Fallout conversions on there.
They have tons of conversions.
It's
and
all
everything.
Fan-based stuff.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
but some of it's really good.
If you don't like any of them, it's a place to start at least.
Some of it's really good, though.
I think Savage Worlds work fine for it.
Yeah, I do too.
Ultimately,
Savage Worlds or Cyberpunk.
So far is the easiest.
Savage Worlds would be the easiest.
Yes.
Not a lot to learn.
And for the Hero Lab question to everybody out there is, to get the 4th edition mechanics for Hero Lab, you have to purchase the authoring kit for Hero Lab, which comes with the Savage Worlds data set, but just so you know.
How long is that going to last?
And well, so far they haven't gotten any cease and desists. It doesn't come with any of the actual game content, just the mechanics. What you can do is there's also a program that you can get to once you get the 4th edition mechanics. When you're at the character creation screen, hit view manual and it takes you to a web page that gives you a link. And this link will take you to it's code.google.com/p/DDI downloader. That's where you need to go to find the D&D Insider downloader program. It's an .exe file, open source. They're updating it all the time. They actually just last updated it today, I checked. And you put that into the Hero Lab Data 4E folder and run it and just follow the on-screen instructions. It'll download all the data from the D&D Insider that is public information, or if you have a D&D Insider account, it will... go get everything that they have based on your D&D Insider account, obviously. But go to wolflair.com and look at the Hero Lab page. I went ahead and sent you the links. But
how much is the?
I believe it's $20.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's not bad. No,
because I still have Hero Lab. I need to update it again.
Well, they just updated the 3.2A, so...
It's going to take a while for mine to update, then.
Well, no, I'll just download the newest update and then reinstall. But, good system. That's where you get the D&D 4th edition stuff for the lovely Hero Lab. And I did want to apologize, Joe, for not responding to you for a couple days because, well, my brother was getting married, so deal with it. That's about all. That's actually all of our lovely feedback, all of our lovely random encounters for today. So, really, I believe we're at end show. So, thanks for listening, guys. Keep watching the skies.
For aliens?
Lizardmen?
Aliens, no, lizardmen don't need to go in the skies.
Really?
The greys come in. No, they just dimensionally travel. It's the greys.
The dimensional traveling.
Yeah, it's the greys that are in the sky.
Okay. Should we worry about the greys?
I would.
Okay. They like probing.
Yeah.
So be careful of the probing.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, 4th edition Dungeons and Dragons. Happy birthday to you.
4th edition Dungeons & Dragons came out 1 year ago. It's a cute little boy, there is no doubt. But not everything has been as smooth as a proud parent might want. The Tome Show, in conjunction with Dungeon Mastering, Critical Hits, Gamers Haven, Sly Flourish, Chatty DM, and At Will, sat down and chatted with Chris Perkins and James Wyatt, the creative and design managers of 4th edition at Wizards of the Coast. They talked to us about how the first year of the new edition has gone, what could have gone better, and what we can expect in the second year of our favorite game. On Wednesday, June 10th, the internet is going to explode with blog posts, as well as full audio of the discussion on thetomeshow.com. Come to the party, you're all invited. 4th edition, 1 year later, at thetomeshow.com.
Happy birthday to you.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. You can find us on the web at www.canadiancrusaders.com. The Gamers Haven Podcast is a member of the Vorpal Network at www.vorpalnetwork.com. Gamers Haven and Thousand Monkey Productions are copyright 2008 and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 3.0 United States License, some rights reserved. Stop by our website to check out our actual play feed, fill out our feedback guest book, or hit us on the forums. Music on the show is used with permission by Joe Hero Band, www.joehero.com, and this has been a Thousand Monkeys production.
Friday night and we're headed for the drive-in. You were mad at something you thought I said. Thought a night out with you and me and BC would make everything alright. Thought you might like an Evil Dead marathon, watching Ash wreck and shop with his chainsaw. You were gone before he made it to the woodshed.